You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Let's go, boy. In all honesty, all the Mets really had to do today, all Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson really had to do today, was have a picture of Steve Cohen on your television screen and a little chyron that just identified him as not Jeff Wilpon. Now, considering that the Wilpons still own SNY, it was unlikely that that was going to happen. But that's all you really needed to know. And it has to feel somewhat surreal that all of this is changing. And I don't know how long it's going to take to really set in. But Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson knocked it out of the park today in every single way. And there are several words that come to mind that you are never going to have to hear again. No, get creative. No, think outside the box. No, lightning in a bottle. And the most important word that's been eliminated from the Mets vocabulary is risk. The New York Mets no longer have to take risks. You loved every single freaking minute of what you heard from Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson today. And we'll hear some more of it throughout the show, but I just want to start here. The thing that is so clear from the get-go is you have somebody who owns the team who is a fan. How important is that? Well, it's exceptionally important. It is somebody that identifies with this particular franchise. Now, Fred and Jeff Wilpon owned the Mets for a very long time. But when they moved into Citi Field, there was not an identification of the Mets franchise. Steve Cohen has lived, eat, and breathed Mets baseball for his entire fan life. And now he is in charge. He wants to win. A World Series outside of 3 to 5 years is going to be disappointing, as he put it. There were so many positive things that you could take from it today that part of me just made me think a Met fan might be starstruck, might not honestly believe that this is going on, that all of a sudden there is a trust that can exist within your fan base with the ownership that the right thing is going to get done. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to go out and spend $250 million on your payroll. What it means is you don't just have to be in it on certain guys. You don't have to hear just the rumors on certain guys and hope that somehow the Mets can slide in there and get a competitive offer even considered. No, it's about results. How refreshing is that phrase? For the New York Mets, for the first time in a very long time, it is about results. You listen to Steve Cohen talk, and yeah, he's a fan, but he also talks about his business. He also talks about how he is judged every day on his business. And he expects the fans to judge him every day on his ownership. And there's an accountability that's there. Now, does all of that mean that he turns into a nutty George Steinbrenner? Who knows? We're not going to find that out for some time. But the first and foremost thing on his mind is winning. Is winning. It's not how many people are in the ballpark. It's not how can we try to squeeze every last bit of juice out of this lemon and hope to make some lemonade, when more often than not, you don't even have enough for a sip? So here we are with an owner that actually seems to have a concept of what a fan thinks. And he may disagree with how the fans are going about expressing their views over the years, or he may disagree with what the fans feel about a particular thing. What you know is, And what I heard today is it's not just going to be about walking in the door, spending a fortune, and trying to win right now. No, it's going to be about walking in the door, trying to build a commensurate organization with being in the number one market in the world from every single aspect, from Sandy Alderson way up top to the president of baseball operations, who they said is going to be somebody that has a very established history in baseball, whoever that turns out to be, to maybe a general manager, to putting together a structure, to putting together all the analytics, to putting together the medical staff, to putting together every single thing that's needed to build a successful organization. The minor league system, which shrinking as it is because of how baseball is now operating, it's going to be operating at a level that is much higher than before. You know, if you were a Sandy Alderson skeptic over the years, all you need to do now is look at the cornerstone pieces of this team and understand that Sandy was the guy that went out and drafted them and made them New York Mets. Whether it's Alonso or Conforto or any of these guys, this was about Sandy. DeGrom's about the only one who was drafted by Omar. But you look at the rest of it, Sandy went and got Noah Syndergaard. Like, all of the centerpieces that you believe can make you a good team were brought here by him. He knows what the hell he's doing. And if you heard one very important answer today about his tenure the first time around to his tenure this time around, it was this. When asked if he felt like his philosophy had changed now that he was in this position versus the first time that he was in this position, what did he say? No, I don't think my philosophy changed. I just think that I can fully implement it now. In other words, he couldn't do it before for one reason or another. Whether Jeff had his hands in everything, whether it was financial, whatever it was, he was hamstrung the first time around. And how he was forced out, and that's what it was, he was forced out, was wrong. And now he's back, and this is an incredibly smart guy who's going to put all of the right people in place. Now, there are concerns, but you can think about those down the line. There's going to be an accountability to the New York Mets. There's going to be judging every day by the owner to the people who are working for him. What are we doing to build this franchise for long-term sustainability of winning? How awesome is that phrase? When was the last time you heard that phrase in relation to the New York Mets? You know, you look at the Yankees over the years, and they're able to do their things, and they're able to draft well in some instances, and they're able to make a few good trades and rebuild on the fly. You do feel like, you do want to trust in this guy, that not only is it going to be about the long term, but it's going to be about trying to win in 2021. We're not going to go out and spend everything to win, but we're going to fill holes. We're going to do it through free agency. We're going to do it through trades. And we're going to develop our players. There was not one thing that came out of the entire press conference in 90 minutes that was remotely concerning or could remotely be broken down and analyzed and overanalyzed into trying to figure out exactly what the Mets' plan was. It was laid out there for you. The plan is to win. What a day for Mets fans. What a day for Mets fans. 800-919-3776. What a day for the Met fans out there. 800-919-ESPN. Show also streaming video, as always, on the ESPN New York Facebook page and on ESPN New York 98.7 FM's Twitter account. So check that out right now. We begin with our buddy Spike in Jersey. What's up, brother?
Good evening, my friend, and welcome to the new world. 2020 has been the crappiest year of a lot of people's lives, including mine. But maybe this is the harbinger of better things to come. I have to feel that way. That guy, like you said appropriately, just showing up there with his face, ace the thing. Plus, he went on, and he just looks like a regular dude. Remember the Detroit Piston announcer who used to, you know, the PA announcer in Detroit when he used to announce, I forget his name, John something, Mason maybe, and he used to do Chauncey with the B, with Billups.
Yeah.
With the intros. That's what this guy should do, you know? Billions. Amazing. Just looks like a regular dude, you know?
He does look like a regular dude, but as we know, he's exceptionally smart, and there will be pitfalls along the way with him, I'm sure. Nothing goes perfectly, but today went perfectly. And when was the last time a Met fan could say a day went perfect?
I don't remember ever. You know, maybe as a little kid going to the Polo Grounds because it was so new, everything was perfect, and you watch the circus there with the 40 wins. But I feel for the guy, the happiness. And in all due respect, like you said many times, and I revered what you said about Fred Wilpon. Couldn't be a nicer guy, and I watched him play in high school. And listen, this is a new beginning for the Mets, and you made a great point, and Michael told me the same thing. The players today, I think Zobrist was the one that perhaps brought this to the fore. These guys have to play multiple positions. He'll figure that out. He'll get some pitching. Money's
that's
not
I we'll talk about who they're going to be going after and all that, Spike. Appreciate the call. There's going to be a lot of things to feel really good about. Now, who they're going to pursue is, you know, I think there are a couple of obvious ones to go after. I think George Springer is an obvious one for the Mets to go after. I think that DJ LeMahieu, if the Yankees are going to pursue Francisco Lindor, that is an absolute no-brainer for the Mets to be pursuing, speaking about versatility and guys like that. But while they may not be in on, let's just say that we're talking about Springer, Bauer, LeMahieu, they may not go get all three. We may be talking about two of them. And before that, the answer was zero. And I hate to put it this way, but who has everybody been thanking when it comes to Met ownership? They've all been thanking Fred Wilpon. Jeff Wilpon does not get a mention. Why do you think that is? There is a perception and there is a reality to it that he just was not respected. And it's not just everything you went through with Steve Cohen, but it's everything that you've seen around the organization for the last 15, 20 years. When he's been as heavily involved as he is. 800-919-3776. Val in the Bronx is next on 98.7 ESPN. Valberto.
Good evening, folks. How are we today? How you doing, Mr. Carlin?
Oh, I'm outstanding, Val. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just want to make one point, and I hope people don't get mad at me or the Mets fans that are out there, because I'm a diehard Yankee fan. Yeah. But for me, it's always better in this city when both teams are doing well. I wanted nothing better than when we had the Subway Series.
Energy. Great energy. And the Subway Series during the regular season would actually mean something those first 10 years.
But the point I want to make, though, is that, you know, it's funny. Like, it's one of those things, like, when we got Clemens, before we got Clemens, we couldn't stand him. And when he came over to New York, all of a sudden we loved him. And I was one of those people that was right there, too. So I was a little bit of a hypocrite. But I just wanted to be known, for all of the Mets fans that are out there that keep calling us the evil empire and how we buy everything and we buy away our mistakes and we buy every play and all that stuff like that. It is so funny. All I've heard since this Cohen thing is how we can now go out as Mets fans. I'm not me. When I say we, I mean them. Mm-hmm. That they're all saying we could go out and buy this. We could go out and buy. It's funny how when the shoe's on the other foot, nobody has a problem with it. And it's all good.
Well, because they've never been able to do it before. That's why. I mean, not in a long, long time. Not since the early 90s, and it didn't work when they did it. So that's why they feel that way, Val. I get where you're coming from, and you think it's ironic that they're doing that, considering they've killed the Yankees over it for years.
Thank you. I find it a little bit funny. Thank you very much. You can enjoy the rest of your night. And go Mets, because I would love for it to be us and you and everybody running in New York City. And let's see who is the better team in NY.
Oh, thanks, Val. I appreciate the call. And look, that's the Mets being better is good for the Yankees, too. It ramps it all up. It makes the sport more relevant around here. You know, baseball has been always relevant in New York, but truth be told, it's never been better. I've never seen it at more of a fever pitch than I did in the 2000 World Series, the early Subway Series years, you know, whether it was, you know, Met fans will always have a very soft spot for Dave Malicki. You will always hear about the day with Sean Estes and Clemens and all and the Piazza stuff. The energy level, it was a fever pitch in this team, in this town when it came to baseball and the Mets and the Yankees and trying to get tickets for Mets-Yankees games at either place was incredibly difficult. Now, the one thing that he actually brought up in there that is possibly the single greatest aspect of this acquisition by Steve Cohen and what it means for the Mets is that they can afford a mistake and actually be able to survive it. When the Mets went out and spent money on Jason Bay and gave him $16 million a year, when he turned out to be an absolute dud, they couldn't afford that. They couldn't afford to be able to make up for that mistake and just carry the money and have it mean nothing. You know, the Yankees could do that when it came to Jacoby Ellsbury. That didn't cripple them. His money's finally coming off, but you get the point. It did not cripple them. They could cover up for their mistakes financially and still keep themselves in the mix. The Mets could never do that. And that is quite simply the number one reason that they have been able to sustain their success and the Mets haven't. Because when you have contracts like that, when you bring in contracts like Robinson Cano because you're trying to think outside the box, because you're trying to get creative, you end up just getting absolutely destroyed, especially when the other guy that the deal was really made for, and Edwin Diaz, turns out to be awful. You don't ever have to make that kind of trade if Steve Cohen was here. You don't even have to remotely consider it. That's what's amazing. Brody Van Wagenen had to do that, and it showed just how inexperienced he was. And I'll give you two other things that I could not get enough of. Two lines today from Steve Cohen that he just slid in there. Not the big statements, just the throwaway lines that tell you everything you need to know about him. Number one, quote, "I'm not crazy about people learning on my dime." That is awesome. That is awesome. In other words, I'm not bringing in a GM to learn. I'm not bringing in anybody to be a baseball executive to learn and to try to roll the dice and to try to get cute. No. I'm bringing in the very best to build this organization. That's where the more important money is going to be spent, on the baseball people and on the baseball infrastructure of the New York Mets. You know, I don't know what that lease looks like, and I know they did a bunch of stuff down in Port St. Lucie, but how much of a complete revamp is that place going to get for their spring training home? Like, they already did a lot, but you watch, if they even stay there, they're going to get that place looking like a brand new major league facility. not just a minor league workout place that, you know, that you have spring training and you hope for the best. And here are some free weights and go make it happen. No. Number two, loved this one. Loved it. Quote, when asked about trying to buy the Dodgers, I came in second with the Dodgers, which means nothing. I came in second, which means nothing. Oh, if you ain't first, you're last. Absolutely love it from Steve Cohen. Great stuff. Great stuff today in crushing that press conference. And it's not just winning the press conferences, they say. No. Hope is a word that we have talked so often about with the Mets in a negative way because they're trying to sell you on hope. Steve Cohen is not trying to sell you hope. Steve Cohen naturally gives you hope. This is not what hope is going to be like anymore.
Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope can drive a man insane.
It's been like that for 20 years. No mas, amigos. Uh-uh. Hope is now something that is very real in your hearts. Watching the Jets last night was enjoyable. Did I say that? I did. It was actual football in some instances. And that is, well, that's something I'm not familiar with around these parts when it comes to the Jets. And, yeah, they lost a game. Yeah, they had a 10-point lead, and, yeah, it fell apart on them. But I don't know of many Jet fans that are rooting for them to win right now. They're so locked in on that number one overall pick. And I get it. I understand it. I think if you walked away with anything less, you'd be remarkably disappointed. Trevor Lawrence in not playing the last 2 weeks. Look, you're disappointed to not see him. I'm sure Clemson, you know, as much as the other guy played well, I didn't get to see enough of that game the other night. But as much as the other guy played well, I think that Lawrence is obviously everything for them. And I think he's going to be a great pro, a generational quarterback, and a long, long time all-pro in the league, potential Hall of Fame quarterback. I have to tell you that if you don't end up with the number one pick, if you end up with the second pick, you're not in such bad shape either. Because, folks, this weekend I saw Justin Fields in person. And I've seen him play plenty of other times. But what I saw this weekend was special. Okay? Now, I will admit it. I don't have the best history with Ohio State quarterbacks. Dwayne Haskins has not panned out in the NFL so far. I'm not giving up yet because it is the Washington Redskins after all. But I'm telling you, from what I saw from Justin Fields, not just what he did against Rutgers, but what he's done so far against other teams and what he does so well, he is special. He can make every throw and do it in an incredible way. I'm going to give you an example. There was a play that was actually called back because of a penalty, but he was rolling to his left with pressure coming, throwing across his body and hit a receiver on the sideline 25 yards down the field in only one spot where his receiver could potentially catch him. There were five or six throws in that game that were, oh my God. There were moments where he had somebody come and free run right at him on a blitz, on whatever, untouched. And he just sidestepped it like it was nothing. It was amazing to watch. And I've seen him enough now, but what I saw over the weekend put me over the top to believe that the first or second pick will be just fine if you don't believe in Darnold. But there is there is another school of thought to be had on it. And we'll get into more on that in just a bit as to whether or not they actually could do something else and it would be better for the franchise. In fact, let's do that right now with Theo and Bethpage. Theo, you are next on Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. What do you got?
Hey, Chris, thank you very much for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you, Theo.
Okay, you know, first off, I just wanted to, before I get to the Jets, you know, everything that Val said is absolutely right. I'm a Yankee fan. I am so happy that the Mets have a real owner, somebody who is not counting pennies, somebody who's going to hire the right people, not take chances. You know, listen, you know, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm a New York fan. You know, you love to see. You remember, like, you know, when Clemens and Piazza, that was some of the most exciting baseball I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I love that.
And frankly, Theo, the energy around that was remarkable. And the bigger problem for the Mets may not have even been that free agents would never even consider coming here the last few years unless it was a last-ditch effort. But that real baseball people didn't want to come here. And think about that for a few years ago. When they're looking for a new GM to replace Sandy, there are four or five guys who were legit guys who had no interest in coming here. Now they're lining up.
Yeah, true. Yeah, true, because there's money.
Yep. And there's real ownership.
There's money. There's
ownership that they believe in. If Sandy Alderson is out front of that ownership and selling people on that, they're going to listen.
But, you know, Chris, you know, just to change the subject, you know, I called in for the Jets.
Yeah.
Okay. Listen, we all know that if Trevor Lawrence comes here, he's going to get ruined. Okay?
I don't think we all know that. I don't think we all know that.
What is, you know, why would you not trade back for a treasure trove of picks and fix multiple positions on your team, okay, when you have an opportunity? I mean, they can potentially get, what, two firsts, 2 seconds for Trevor Lawrence?
I mean, you can get a lot. It's hard to say how far you're moving back. It's hard to say... all of those kind of things. There's a lot of different things that would weigh in. You're going to get a fortune if you want to trade the pick, okay?
True.
You are absolutely going to get a fortune. But let me ask you this question.
God.
If you're the Jets, do you believe in Sam Darnold?
Yes, I do.
You do.
Yes, now, I do. I do. Because look at his coaching. And I'm going to say another thing.
No, hang on. Listen, I'm going to give you a chance here. That was my first question because you have to understand the argument is fully valid that Sam has not had much to work with. I totally get that. But you already do. It's not like you need all of those picks. You already do have 9 picks in each of the next 2 drafts, including 4 first-round picks.
We need more.
Yes, you can get more. But if you can do all of that and in the midst of it get a can't-miss franchise quarterback, whereas there may be aspects of Sam that you don't necessarily love and you want to turn around and trade him for a second-round pick and you're still getting Lawrence or you're getting Fields, I'm not going to have a problem with it.
But that's speculation. If you put this kid with a decent... And first of all, Joe Flacco...
You're speculating too!
...last night because he had good protection, okay? He had over 3 seconds to throw the ball. Sam has never had that. Now, let me tell you this. You trade back and you get 2 firsts, 2 seconds. You surround this kid with a decent offensive line. Now, the Patriots have a terrible pass rush. So nobody was getting to Joe Flacco last night. He had time in the pocket and he threw balls and he had all 3 of his receivers. Sam Darnold can do this. This is the perfect opportunity. This is exactly what teams who don't know what they're doing do. Okay? They take a player and they ruin him.
I don't agree with you, though, and thanks for the call. I don't agree with you definitively that the Jets would ruin Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields because you don't know who the next coach is going to be. If I was keeping Adam Gase here, I would have real concerns. Adam Gase is not going to be the coach. We all know this, okay? If you're bringing in the right guy to develop the quarterback, and not just the head coach, but the coordinator, the quarterback coach, all those guys. It's not just about the head coach, even though head coaches now are more likely than ever to be offensive play callers or offensive gurus, then I'm sorry, I'm going to find another way to do it, because I don't want to put myself in the position of passing up on a generational quarterback. And yeah, I can get a lot in return for it, but you also have to think in these terms. One thing is a can't miss, and then the other thing may not be. You know, if you're trading down 3, 4, 5 spots and you're getting a bunch of the other picks, you have to get them all right. See, Lawrence, to me, is an absolute no-brainer in every single way. But I have to tell you, Justin Fields might be just as good. He looked like it to me the other night. When you see a guy in person doing the kind of things that he was doing, man, that's impressive. But my point is this. If you want to trade the pick away, you better make sure that you're getting a boatload in return. And you better make sure that you're very confident that you can win with Sam Darnold. But my point would be, you already got a boatload in return for Jamal Adams. Oh, by the way, I saw somewhere today, out of 90 safeties in the league, was rated like number 78 so far. I believe Incarcerated Bob put that tweet up from Pro Football Focus. What a freaking joke. Bye-bye, Jamal. Jets did the right thing there. Guys, the one thing that we all seem to forget is that it's not very often that people change their colors. And when they get more money, as Bart Scott told me this, they become a lot more of it. We saw that with Odell Beckham, and I think we'll probably see it with Jamal Adams. I talked about this last night. And I did it after the game on a video over on Twitter, because we obviously didn't have a show last night. The game was on our air. I have to tell you, at the end of the game, over the last minute and 51 seconds, and I know what happened, and I'm not saying that he was tanking the game, but something I've talked about over the last week and a half is Bill Belichick and the prospect of the Jets having the number one overall pick. Now, I understand that people are not necessarily going to believe that Bill Belichick's ever going to want to tank a game. Understood. But there is a big part of him, as much as he thinks about what they're doing next and practice the next day and all that stuff, there is a part of him that cannot deny that it would be better in the long term for the Patriots if Trevor Lawrence is not with the New York Jets. He's a special level talent. So when you have an opportunity, like they did last night, to get the Jets a win, to get them out of position to get that number one overall pick, I'm not going to say that he's not going to try to win the game or that he's going to try to lose the game, but I felt like in that last minute and a half, he wasn't super duper trying to win it. What do I mean by that? Allow me to take you back. A minute 51 left in the game. Patriots have tied it up, okay? They come back from 10 points down. Bill is never going to do anything that is outwardly going to look like he's throwing the game or he's trying to lose. Jets get the ball back with a minute 51. On second down and 2 or 3, with what, probably about a minute 25, they sack Joe Flacco. The Patriots at this point, for a loss of about 6 yards, the Patriots at this point have all three timeouts remaining. All three. They didn't use one right there after a second down sack, understanding that the Jets have to throw the ball on third down. Not one. They let about 25 seconds run off the clock. That is red flag number one for me. Jets throw an incompletion with about 51 seconds left, punted away, 47 seconds. Patriots get the football back at their own 20. Jets are blitzing. I understand. When you get a blitz coming, you're going to run a screen. So the Pats run screen number one. They run a draw against the blitz. Jets not fooled very much. Draw. Gets 7 or 8 yards, whatever. And call their second timeout. Second or first? Maybe their first one there. Then they run another screen again. That doesn't do nearly as well. So just to fast forward a bit, the Patriots call timeout on 3rd and 1 with 23 or 4 seconds left, whatever it was, at their own 42-yard line. So they have only gotten from their own 20-yard line to their own 42 in that span of about 30 seconds where they've had the ball. So not major pickup of yardage there. At that point, on 3rd and 1, with 22 seconds left at your own 42, you don't necessarily have to put yourself in the position of making sure you get the first down because you're going for it either way. But what the Patriots did was have Cam Newton run a quarterback sneak right up the middle. He got the first down, but the clock's ticking, 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 ticking. And they get up and have to spike it, and they lost another 10 seconds. It was odd. So they're still at the 43-yard line. And then Cam steps up and makes a big throw, and they actually pick up about 15 or 20 yards because the Jets, who had been blitzing the entire time, go to a soft zone, and they leave a guy open. So it's almost like, oh, Cam's like, wow, okay, let me throw it there. So they lined up, and they put themselves in position for a 51-yard field goal. So I want you to really consider all of that, okay? The last 2 minutes of the game, you could have saved at least an additional 35 seconds for yourself that you chose not to. Willingly chose not to. And the best position that you put yourself in was for a 51-yard field goal because the Jets changed their defense and went to a soft zone. I'm just saying this. Nick Folk hits the field goal, Patriots win. Okay. There was a much better way of handling that entire situation and lining yourself up, picking up more yardage, and putting yourself with more time in a better field goal situation. 51-yarder could have been a 38-yarder quite easily if the Patriots had even remotely handled that clock better. When does Belichick screw that kind of thing up? Now, look, he's not going to... Look, we all would have been raising a red flag if Belichick goes out there and takes a knee and, hey, let's get this thing to overtime. I don't love our chances here trying to get there. No. He's not going to do that. He's not going to make it look obvious because then it's going to turn into a huge scandal. All I'm saying is, if you think for a minute it doesn't enter Bill Belichick's mind about the Jets getting the number one overall pick, you're nuts when it comes to a generational quarterback being available. You're nuts. In a season that, frankly, is lost, the Patriots, even at 3-5, they're not going to the playoffs. They're dead. It's over. Pack it in. Bag it, loser. Your season is done. That team is bad. He knows this. He knows he has a team that's not very good. So in that game last night, all of that is absolutely entering his mind, even after his team came back. Because you can't not try to come back. But you can do some things here and there that make it harder on yourself. And I do believe that Bill Belichick last night did make it a little bit harder on his team than he needed to. And I don't think that was an accident. Tony La Russa. Honestly, you know what? Dirtbag is a word that comes to mind that feels relatively appropriate at the moment. And the reason is the DUI. Now, it's his second DUI. He had another one in 2007. And I want to be clear about this. Not everybody's perfect, of course. Not everybody's expected to be perfect all the time. But when it comes to DUI, I have always felt that there is not enough punishment in professional sports for it. Frankly, there may not be enough punishment in society for it. You are literally taking the lives of other people and putting them in your drunken hands when you get behind the wheel. And let's start this discussion by saying this. I think any adult of a certain age, let's say you're in your mid-40s, and if you're to tell the truth and really be honest with yourself, if you say that you have never gotten behind the wheel when maybe you shouldn't have, you're probably lying to yourself. You probably are. Now, I think that I've gone out of my way. You know, I've never driven drunk or anything like that. But I think that there have all been times when you could look at it and you could say, maybe I shouldn't have just in case there. Stuff like that. When it comes to DUI, I've lost friends to it. And so I feel pretty strongly about it. And I've seen how it's affected those families. I lost a dear friend back in college when I was a senior, and he had graduated the year before, died at 22 years old. And he was drunk and or high and hit a tree and killed himself. Didn't do it on purpose, but yeah, that happened. And I know of people who have lost people to it. So when you have somebody like Tony La Russa, who gets it for the second time in 13 years, and when he does, and he makes comments to the police officer along the lines of, hey, do you know who I am? I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm a Hall of Famer. During his arrest, he was incoherent. Incoherent. So the White Sox hired him on October 29th. He got arrested, what, several months ago for this, and told the arresting officer, I am a Hall of Famer baseball person. The initial details of the arrest were provided in an affidavit from the arresting officer. And he said he was returning from a dinner with friends with the California Angels baseball team. When asked for identification, according to the report, La Russa continued instead to talk on the phone to a AAA representative. The officer repeated the command, and La Russa tossed cash and cards onto the passenger seat but did not furnish a driver's license. The officer asked him to hang up his phone and provide the license. He was shuffling through it, and La Russa then was asked to get out of the test for a field sobriety test. Why are we doing the test? Officer said there was an odor of alcohol emanating. When he said about Officer discussed administering a portable breath test. LaRusso said, I don't trust it. What makes you think I don't have control of my facilities? He agreed to take the breath test if it gets me out of here, and it came back 0.09. And before the arresting officer placed him in the vehicle, LaRusso said, do you see my ring? I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person. I'm legit. I'm a Hall of Famer, brother. You're trying to embarrass me. Yeah, Tony did not need anyone's help in embarrassing him here. And when we have Jerry Reinsdorf and the White Sox organization say that they were aware of what happened when they hired him, did they know all of this? Did they know that he sat there and said to an officer, I'm a Hall of Famer? Basically, who the hell do you think I am? Get me out of here. Tony La Russa, I have always felt, on a personal level, is a bit of a jackass. And this, once again, proved it. And I don't understand how an organization like the White Sox can stand behind him at this point. When you read those kind of things in an arresting report, and it gets out there publicly, and Jerry Reinsdorf basically says, screw you, I'm going to do what I want. What does that say to people who have lost members of their family to drunk driving? What does it say to them? I mean, you are literally putting a drunken weapon in your hands to the tune of 2,000 pounds and moving it at high speeds. And you are putting not just your life, the lives of other people in the car with you, and the lives of other people who don't even know that their lives could be in danger. Yet somehow, I remember the Jets suspended, I was mad at Rex for this, when they suspended Braylon Edwards for a quarter for a DUI. And that's just one minor example. I'm not picking on the Jets. There have been hundreds of other examples over the years that show that, frankly, all professional sports don't treat this as a serious crime and don't ever suspend accordingly. I mean, think about it. Performance-enhancing drugs in baseball, you're getting 60 games right out of the gate or whatever it is, 80 games right out of the gate. But you're putting just performance-enhancing drugs in your body. You're putting everybody else within 10 square miles of you, wherever you're driving, in danger, you might get a couple of games. Why is it that there's not a mandatory when it comes to DUI in professional sports? How is that the case? Now, look, there are cases where, breathalyzers are off, all those kinds of things. Those things happen. That's true. But when you get convicted of DUI or you plead guilty to a DUI charge, why shouldn't you get suspended for a month in baseball? Why shouldn't you get suspended for four games in football? And why shouldn't those penalties be more commensurate with what the crime is and actually make you pay for them? Because chances are you're not going to jail. This is one of those crimes that does not get nearly enough in terms of the attention and in terms of the punishment. And when you have an arrogant blankety-blank like Tony La Russa saying, I'm a Hall of Famer, I'm legit, brother, you're just trying to embarrass me. No, Tony, shut up. And Jerry Reinsdorf, speaking of embarrassments, should not be standing behind Tony La Russa right now. That's complete and utter garbage. When will these sports honestly do the right thing when it comes to DUI and start punishing accordingly? It needs to be treated a lot more seriously, and for some reason, it continues to be no big deal to them.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.